Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, and that's familiar slap of the bass is this time for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle. Hey, we have a lot of news to talk about. There's some very interesting news as far as the Fury Wilder fight. We also, those of you guys that have subscribed to Daz. That was a very good fight coming out of Chicago last night, even though it ended up being a draw. One gentleman getting knocked down in the 10th round, and I believe the other being knocked down in the 12th. So, it's a very good fight, and we have some good fights coming up. Scully is actually on his way back from Chicago. He was at the fights last night. It'll be good to talk to him next week, see what some of his observations were. Plus, he was at the West Coast Boxing Hall of Fame induction last week. So we'll also be glad to talk to him about that. Hoping that perhaps we can get the chat tonight. I haven't heard back from him. The professor will be around shortly. And let's see what some of the... I was hoping to see Dave on here so we could get a little recap of the Devin Haney fight, which he went to down here in Temecula last week. And I wanted to get to talk a little bit about that. Also about Canelo moving up now to... challenge who? What's his name? That's kind of what I heard. Rocky Fielding, super middleweight. What happened? He said that he'd move up to the super middleweight division and challenge Rocky Fielding on December 15th in Madison Square Garden. He's going up to 168, which means that there's not going to be a fight between him and Canelo. Now, there's some very interesting things going on here. Oscar, of course, has said that his contract with HBO is expiring. Well, everyone's contract with HBO is expiring. Now they have to seek another contract. It seems that Main Events and NBC are talking about a collaboration. As well as PBC has, I believe, signed for a series of fights. So where does Golden Boy go from here? And more importantly, well, maybe not more importantly, but just as important, what happens to Triple G now? he's not the number one ranked in the 160-pound division. But will he fight the number one ranked 160 to try to get his title back? Or will they make him go around and go down to the bottom and start up? Who puts more butts in seats? Jamal Charlo, Triple G, or Triple G and Jamal Charlo? Should be interesting to see how they work this out. Another thing I want to talk to Javon about as soon as he gets in is it seems that Tyson Fury has not invaded testing for this Deontay Wilder fight. Now, I can see where the fight itself makes dollars. But does it make sense for Deion Wilder to possibly risk some type of contamination during this fight? VADA rules are very strict and are the same. As a matter of fact, I think we've seen this before where drugs that are legal in the UK are not legal here under the VADA rules. Just had a case recently. Was it Amir Khan? I'm sure the professor will come in with a little more facts as far as that's concerned. But just thinking about this, maybe that's why there will never be a Joshua Fury fight. Do you trust Tyson Fury to come in clean? I'm kind of wondering if Deontay is this a sign of frustration as well as recklessness by our champion? Tyson Fury might not be that skilled, or at least that flamboyant on your feet, heavyweight, but he can punch. And according to Fury himself, he'll do whatever's necessary to get the upper hand. So by not being in VADA, is Deontay Wilder giving him too much of a chance? Talk a little bit about that fight last night. We have the welterweights, Vargas and Delorme, Jesse Vargas and Thomas Delorme. Delorme has been on the pugilist corner before, those of you that don't know. This was actually from all descriptions, even if you wanted to just read it, the recap by Dan Raphael in ESPN, You could tell this was a rock'em sock'em fight. Those of you that have the zone, I'm sure this was a very exciting. Two of the judges scored about 113-113, but one judge had actually had to fight 115-111 for Vargas. I didn't really see, like I said, the final fight, but they did show. I have seen the 10th and 12th round. Zorme knocked down in the 10th. He got a draw, even though he was dropped by Vargas in the last few seconds of the 12th, which actually turned out to be the final punch of the fight. This is what might have swayed the one judge, 115-111. But it was very good for boxing. It was good for the casual fan. And it was especially good for the hardcore boxing fans. And I'm going to assume that at some time we're going to have a rematch here. Good evening, Professor. How are you doing this evening?
Doing good, JK. Me and the family on vacation, but, you know, the sport that I love, I got to try to find a way to make some time.
Oh, should we ask, I mean, you know, the last time we saw you with your feet in the sand and straw hat. Where was that? I know the pictures were very nice.
Oh, I was in Punta Cana in Dominican Republic. I kept it local. You know, it was a 3-day weekend for the kids for school. So, you know, we got a little timeshare and stuff. So we just came back up to the Poconos as we always do. You know, just to get away from the hustle and bustle from the city. So we've been up here relaxing, you know, enjoying ourselves. And I squeezed in my boxing. I kept my tablet with me everywhere I went.
Oh, man, I hear you. Now, I have to ask you because you were telling us last week about the zone. And you were saying that, you know, you had got your subscription and whatnot. Now, I know you said that you were away with the family, but did you happen to watch the DeLorme fight last night, DeLorme Vargas fight?
Yeah, I got to catch the fight. I have the app downloaded on my tablet, so it was easy for me to access it. And, you know, unfortunately, man, my heart goes out to Jesse Vargas. Jesse, it just seems he just can't get over the hump. It's always the speed bump in the way. As you know, this is his second draw in a row, didn't he just have a draw with Adrian Broner months back earlier in the year? He had a fight with Timothy Bradley where most fans felt he was outclassed, but he felt like he gained some hope by hurting Bradley in the 12th round and nearly taking him out, and he was never granted a chance to try to give Bradley his first loss. So, it's just unfortunately because they were saying that the winner of that fight was going to possibly be a mandatory for the new renowned welterweight champion, Sean Porter. But now that this fight is a draw, it seems that they're going to want for a rematch. Now, I don't know if that rematch will be on a main event Maybe it'd be on the undercard of a major event, but I doubt that they would make this fight a main event.
Yeah, it is unfortunate for Jesse, as you said. But one judge did have the fight 115-111 for Jesse, even though he got knocked down, I believe it was the last punch of the 12th round. What was your score? What did you think?
I thought it was it could have, look, I'll have to watch the fight again. I think it could be a draw, and I wouldn't be mad if maybe they gave it one, maybe Jesse Vargas won by 1 point. But you know, I'm cool with a draw. They both had their moments, and unfortunately, that knockdown cost Vargas the fight. You know, I think he could have eked out the win if he didn't get dropped.
And what did you think about the rest of that card?
Well, the rest of the card, I mean, everybody won who I expected to win. My question to you is, what is your thoughts on Big Baby Miller and his fight, and what is your thoughts on Big Baby's weight and conditioning going forward?
Oh, man, I think we've talked about this. I'm not sure that Big Baby really takes the fight game serious. He seems to I guess maybe maybe it's the team behind him. Maybe he figures that he has so much talent, but someone needs to really get in his face. I mean, I realize he's a heavyweight, but he needs not just a trainer, but he needs a teacher. He would be someone that needs someone like Freddie Roach back in his prime, maybe even going further back, Emmanuel Stewart, Dundee. He needs someone like that. To me, he actually looked better at the beginning of his career when he was starting to coming off from an amateur career. He looked better in the beginning of his career than he does now. He still doesn't seem to know how to his footwork is atrocious. He doesn't seem to know how to throw power punches. He looks more like a flailer, like a rock'em sock'em robot, not depending on any type of technique, just strictly coming forward and hoping to hit you with something spectacular. But there's no polish, no you usually think that fighters, as they go up in rankings and whatnot, usually you try to look for some improvement in their technique, or something. No, I don't see that in Big Baby Miller. I've been a real critic of Dominic Brazil. But, in a lot of ways, I think they're very similar. They just don't seem to take the weight class serious enough for them to get in the proper shape for them to really be contenders, except for on paper. Your thoughts?
Well, I think Big Baby Miller is a emotional person, right? So he keys on, you know, like loyalty, like people just loyal to him and people word, you know. And I think maybe far as training and conditioning himself, I think maybe he's fighting to his competition. Because if you remember, three fights ago, he had got himself back down to like a career low. Remember, he had dropped down, and we had him on the show. He had dropped down the weight. He was like down to like 270 something, you know, and trending in the right direction as far as his conditioning, as far as his weight. And then you seen after that, his weight fluctuated, and now this is like his career high. Because remember, from last year, there was speculation about him getting the Joshua shot, right? They dangle it out there. Eddie Hearn threw it out there. Yeah, Joshua make his debut in the U.S., and we're going to have it in Brooklyn, Big Baby Miller, right? So they carried Big Baby along, figuring that he'll get in line for a Joshua fight, and he never got it. So probably his drive and his focus and his energy, you know, it dropped because he felt maybe betrayed. Like, hey, they just stringing me along. I'm thinking I'm going to get this shot at Joshua, and I'm fighting these other guys. You know, yeah, he's giving me a check. He's throwing me a couple of dollars, but that's not what we talked about. You know, we talked about the Joshua shot. So me personally, I think he's fighting to his competition, you know, as far as his training regimen, because I guarantee you he wouldn't come in at 317 versus Joshua.
I'm gonna go a little out of the box here, and maybe I'm bringing in, you know, maybe I'm looking at this strictly from a pessimistic point of view, but you kind of all know, good habits have a lot to do with how far you advance, whether it be in life, whether it be in your training, or whatnot. Now, I understand this might be a career high, and I understand, you know, loss of motivation and all of that. But when you're fighting at this particular level, isn't there a certain point where you get to that, well, you know, since that didn't happen, then let's make it happen. Kind of like what Deontay Wilder did. I mean, Deontay, when you look back at his opponents, it's not like he fought a plethora of top 10 opponents, but he kept himself in a position where the boxing public was interested. When Big Baby comes in at 317 pounds, and it would be different if he put on a spectacular show at 317 pounds. But like you said, since he's been on the show, his performances have diminished. Even though there have been winning performances, they've actually diminished. So I understand when you talk about the demoralization, but what about the building of good habits?
Yeah, you got a point there. I mean, me personally, I mean, I'm a professional fighter. I mean, no matter who I'm fighting, I'm going to make sure I'm myself in the best condition to win the fight, no matter who the opponent is. Now, as far as my aggression, that's something totally different. My aggression might not be as much against a less of a fighter compared to maybe the A-level, top-notch type of fighter. But far as my training regimen, that's not going to change. So, I mean, that's something personal. He say he does like to eat. He loves his cheeseburgers. And, you know, that's something that he struggled with, you know. Everybody has a struggle, a drug addiction or whatever it is. But, you know, that's something that he have to seek help if he want to fix that problem. But far as his overall input on the heavyweight division, I still feel that he can still give them problems in the heavyweight division just due to his punch output and then his stature. He's a big guy. It's hard to move him. So he would definitely give any of those guys a problem in the division.
I tell you what, you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing a fight between him and Brazil. And have the winner fight Luis Ortiz. I think that would be the type of motivation that either one of them would need in order to put on their best performances and possibly live up to the potential that a lot of people see in them. What do you think?
Yeah, that would be a good fight because both of them have a lot of heart. You know, if they don't have nothing else, they do have a lot of heart. They're going to lay it all out on the line, and they're going to go for it. So it'll definitely be a good, explosive fight. I think they will get up for it. You know, Big Baby is a big trash talker, and Brazil is the type of guy you can get under his skin. So you get under his skin, he's going to start chirping back, and it's just going to be in the making of an exciting fight.
I want to stick in the heavyweight division because I have a couple of questions about some things that have actually made the news. The first one, I was really surprised to hear about, and that was that Fury was not under Vader testing for the Wilder fight. Now, we just saw a couple of weeks ago where we had a UK fighter that was declared ineligible because even though the drugs that they were using in the UK were legal there, they weren't legal under VADA. Can you kind of fill us in on what the hell's going on there? Sorry about the French, but
to my knowledge, that's fake news because that they will be tested. I can get more clarification on that soon as tomorrow because I will have some people that will be in contact with both camps. So that'll be a question that I will definitely make sure ask because I doubt Wilder would be going into a situation like that, especially due to this history with his opponents coming into the fight, failing tests. So I'll definitely get more clarification on it.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing that you said. You know, that would be either something that, I mean, not only just dangerous, but, you know, I mean, you know, that it just didn't quite make sense, but it's making, you know, headlines in the Ring magazine, which we consider the Bible, and also ESPN. So, you know, these are sources that we consider really reliable, and now the professor has said that they were fake news. Hey, what else is fake news? Never mind, we're not going to go there. but if, anyway, now the other thing was that Eddie Hearns has said that they made a much improved offer to Wilder, but they have yet to hear back from the Wilder camp. Is that something else that you'll check on, or do you already know that this is also fake news?
Well, it's not fake news that Eddie Hearns said that, and that that has, you know, the deal has been, the offer has been sent or whatnot. But what it is smoke and mirrors. All it is smoke and mirrors. We all know that Eddie Hearn is trying to line up Anthony Joshua to fight Dillian White in April. And he wanted to utilize trying to put a deadline on making the fight. But once the new media started making a lot of noise and fans and chat rooms made a lot of noise, he backpedaled on his deadline. Now he's saying, oh, all I want to do is have a talk. We could just talk about it and get things clear. But we all know that's not the case. You know, I personally think that they, like I said, they just want to buy time. They want to buy time. They really don't want the Wilder fight immediately. But it seems that they are being backed into a corner due to that. If you, that interview that Eddie Hearn said these things, if you know, he threw out little key points that go over people's heads. So he said, oh, yeah, because, you know, we want to try to get things into in discussion, because in October, the WBO will be up for a mandatory. So he's already throwing out roadblocks out there. So when the fight isn't made, he can easily say, remember when I said he had a mandatory coming up? So, boom, he has to take care of his obligation. So that's just smoke and mirrors. In my opinion, they're just mad that Deontay Wilder is not entertaining none of that BS that they're talking about, because he said, look, I'm going on my own. I'm doing my own thing. I'm done with them. I wasted enough time with them. So now Eddie is just doing damage control, basically.
Speaking of damage control, there's some things that even though you text me about it, there doesn't seem to be a lot of retaliation, impetus, whatever you want to call it, insult from the boxing world. And I thought some of the boxing, hardcore boxing fans, especially the Mexican fans, would kind of be in an uproar. It seems that Canelo is giving up the 160-pound title to go up to fight Rocky Fielder at 168. Now, I know that you, maybe you didn't quite disagree with the harsh words that I used, because ducking is a very serious type of accusation. But I am now more convinced than ever that Canelo is ducking Chavo. Here we go again. Rocky Fielding? Are you kidding me? I mean, are they going to insult us and try to also make it a pay-per-view? You got any details on this, Professor?
Yeah, Rocky Fielding is a British champion. He only has one loss, which was a knockout loss to a gentleman that we just seen fight. What was it, last week or the week before last? Calum Smith, the gentleman that knocked out. Oh man, I'm having a brain fart. He just knocked out, George Groves. He knocked out George Groves in the tournament, the Super Six tournament, for the championship belt, as we saw, which was Liam Smith's brother, which you saw is a solid fighter, solid puncher. We have to see what he brings to the table. We have to see when they do the face-off, how big is he more over Canelo, because we know Canelo isn't a very tall guy. He's just short and stocky. So we have to see how they size him up. But since this news came out, I had time to think about the whole situation, and I got mixed emotions about it. Like, you know, in one way, I feel that he's retreating from Charlo, but in the same breath, it's like I have to applaud him for challenging himself and going up to another weight class, even though he's going after the lightest out of the division, but he's challenging himself. You know, and we can't say the same for someone like Triple G, someone who his manager, or not his manager, his trainer, Abel Sanchez, said, hey, we're willing to fight anybody from 54 to 68. We ain't seen it yet. You know, you was only fought at 160 at one weight class your whole career, even from the amateurs, and Canelo is striving to be great. He's fought in three different, well, this will be his third division, you know. So, hey, I can't knock him for that, you know. And what also makes it a good situation is that this forces this mandatory that the WBC has put on now, where Triple G has to face Charlo. So, as you can see, if you haven't seen JK in the headlines over the last couple of days, Triple G camp is not happy about this. They thought they was going to get the easy way back to that big check to Canelo to do the trilogy. They thought they was going to get a nice, easy cupcake warm-up fight and get right back to the third fight with Canelo. Whereas, no, this guy is number one, and like y'all said in the past, when people was getting on Triple G for fighting the Willie Monroes and those other guys, and what did they say? Oh, that's our mandatory. So this is a mandatory, so you have to take the fight, you know? So like I said, it's mixed emotions about it. You know, now if Canelo takes this fight and then fights Charlo in May, then, hey, that would be awesome. That would be great. So we'll have to wait and see.
I like what you said about Triple G and Charlo, and I would really like to see that fight. But once again, I go back to the pay-per-view aspect, and as we've all mentioned, you know, HBO is going out of the fight business, and this has been a you know, the staple of Golden Boy, the fact that they had the contract with HBO. Okay, now there's HBO is leaving, as I said. So now Oscar is kind of scrambling. Main Event has went to NBC, something that we'll talk about a little bit later. PBC has also renewed their contract with NBC. So, see, we got Top Rank with ESPN. So, is this going to be a pay-per-view? Or do you think this is going to be on the Zone or perhaps ESPN2?
Well, if I'm Canelo, because at the end of the day, as they always say, this is a business, right? So why not go out with a bang, right? I would do HBO pay-per-view. I would do it. And here's why. Now, I don't know about the $80, $90. I'll do the fans a little treat. Give them $49.99 standard, $59.99 HD pay-per-view. And that'll get more people to buy the pay-per-view on HBO, and it'll be the last pay-per-view on HBO, and he can go out with a bang and try to stack the card, the undercard, with some action fights. And then you have room to negotiate once again at the table with the other networks after that fight, because once again, he'll be a free agent. Now, if he goes and signs with a new network for this fight and start a new contract, then he has no more leverage room after that. He's in that contract. So why not capitalize on getting the last pay-per-view on HBO in December and walk out the door with that bag?
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. Most of all, I respect the price point. Yeah, I think that, you know, if he were to do something like that, that would be great. I'm sure the numbers would probably be where they wanted to be, even though the price point might not be. But that sounds great. And it would be a good PR for Golden Boy, but you've been somewhat of a study of a Golden Boy and followed their fighters. When they were at their peak, and now that they're down to almost a solo fighter. Well, they are. It is a solo fighter, Canelo. What do you see next for Oscar, and do you see a Golden Boy star on the horizon? You know, even though Canelo is relatively young, what is he, 28? Devon?
Yeah, Oscar has Canelo. So as long as he has Canelo, he will have, if not the biggest star in boxing, one or one of the biggest stars in boxing. So he'll be okay. I think he'll be okay. Like I said before, I think him and Bob Arum is going to be doing some business together in the future. So they'll be making some fights, and De La Hoya will stay afloat.
We spoke a little bit about, well, I did, about the new NBC contract with Main Events. We also see that Al has also had made an extension with NBC. Your thoughts? I mean, you know, there was a time, I think it was probably, it might have been a little bit before your time, but, you know, since you studied boxing, you might remember it, but there was a time when NBC was really big in the boxing game. They went into the prisons. They had shows from there. ABC had shows from there. NBC also participated in some of, I might be wrong here, but I believe it also showed some of the Pan-American and some of the other amateur events. So what's your thought about NBC getting back into the business of boxing?
I mean, it's great that they can get into, you know, home, everyone home, because it's a local channel. But once again, I don't think we're going to get major fighters on the network. It will be contenders and, you know, up-and-coming stars. It won't be champions, as I would say. But it's great, you know. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, I remember growing up, and I think I was a teenager, and Mike Tyson, they got out of jail, and he had a fight, and it was on NBC. He was Muslim, as I can remember. It became a Muslim, and it was on NBC. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, like I said, NBC is went into some, you know, very strange place. Well, still, I guess you could say strange places to bring some of their bouts on. But, you know, I do agree with you, but I think, you know, I mean, we had HBO after dark, so, you know, maybe this is, you know, somewhere where, you know, it'll be something like that. You know, I mean, we have the ESPN Friday Night Fights. Fox has fights on various times, so I'm sure they're thinking about maybe competing on those levels. You know, I'm not, like you said, I mean, I'm not expecting some of the major fights on NBC, but, you know, we have a somewhat of a balanced playing field now, where Al doesn't have all the fighters that he used to have. And, you know, you have Eddie Hearns, a lot of them have turned to Eddie Hearns, Matchbox. I think we can find some pretty good competition on, you know, some of these weekly fight cards, if that's what it comes down to.
Most definitely, most definitely. But now, with this heavyweight division, where do we go now? Going into 2019, we have a situation on our hands where I don't know if you was privy to the war of words between Dillian Whyte and Luis Ortiz this week. Now, Dillian Whyte came out and stated that they offered Luis Ortiz a fight over the summer. They saying Ortiz priced himself out, you know. So Luis Ortiz came back and said, you know, put your balls on the line and fight me. So Luis Ortiz also said, look, I have a spot vacant December 1st on the Wilder Fury undercard. Come and fight me. So Dillian Whyte comes back and say, well, I'll fight you, but it has to be on December 22nd. So they already have the venue. December 22nd, JK, is supposed to be Dillian Whyte versus Derek Chisora, the rematch. So why would you throw out December 22nd when you know that you pretty much got a fight already in place with Chisora for the rematch? So do you think it's smoke and mirrors, JK, or do you think Eddie Hearn will actually scratch the Chisora fight to put him in there with Luis Ortiz?
No, he's not going to take the Ortiz fight on the 22nd. And this is not to say, I mean, this is not to diminish the skills of one Chisora. But, come on, King Kong is a much more dangerous fight. We've already seen, that these type of fighters can give Whyte problems. And I think, and maybe I'm using the wrong word here, but I think the Chisora fight is a much more safer fight, and you can get paid, less risk, more reward, and you can, use this as a springboard for possibly a matchup with Ortiz, but I don't see him scratching Chisora for Ortiz. Hearn is too smart a businessman for that.
And even though Luis Ortiz took a loss to Deontay Wilder, it seems that he's still the boogeyman in the division. It seems that no one wants to fight him.
Precisely. That's my point exactly. Everybody throws his name out there until he responds. Once he responds, it's like, I poked the boogeyman. Yeah, you poked him, but then you ran away from the cage. And this is just another example of that. Ortiz, like you said, he's coming off that loss to the champ. But, everybody knows, who Ortiz is. They know how dangerous he is. And, this is definitely smoke and mirrors. It's kind of like you said, with the Joshua Baby Miller, we can throw it out there to keep you interested, but we're not going around third base on this one. Come on.
Well, he did get a comeback victory this past summer, a couple of months ago, on the undercard, and he got a standing ovation. It was the card out in California. If I'm not mistaken, it was the Mikey Garcia, Robert Easter fight.
Undercard.
Right. he fought on and got a standing ovation. The fans really loved the guy. It seemed like he gained more credibility from the loss of Deontay Wilder than he had in any of his past victories.
Well, no, I mean, you know, when you look at the heavyweight division, and we all applauded, like, you know, now we're talking about Dillian White, we're talking about David Chisora, we're talking about Tyson Fury, but come on, when you really look at the heavyweight division, and you look at the guys that look like our old heavyweights, like, you know, Riddick Bowe, Evander Holyfield. There's only three guys that really step up to look like they not only had the technique, but they also had the crowd appeal. And that's Joshua, King Kong, and Wilder. I mean, the rest of them are...
You can't leave out Fury. You can't leave out Fury. You can't leave Fury out.
Well, does Fury look? Is he pleasing to watch? I mean, when you compare Ortiz is applauded.
Oh, you
say
crowd pleasing? Okay,
right,
got me. Right. You're right. Crowd pleasing. All right. He's not crowd pleasing. But he wins.
he wins. But, you know, but when you look at the top three, that, like you said, you know, the crowd is standing. The crowd is giving them standing ovations. This crowd recognizes their abilities. Those are the top three. Tyson Fury wins, you know, but he's kind of the boogeyman of the division. Even, you know, when you talk about some of the other guys, Povetkin and some of those guys, I mean, they look nowhere like those top three.
Correct.
What are you thinking here? I say it's a fight that's not going to happen, because either they're going to try to underprice Ortiz, or Ortiz finds such a bigger fight. I'm kind of looking ahead here, but what if we had a Fury Ortiz on the other card of Wilder Joshua?
That wouldn't happen, JK, because politics. You have to realize Fury is with Frank Warren. Luis Ortiz is advised by Al Heyman, and Joshua is with Eddie Hearn. And Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren don't rock with each other.
That's the politics. I'm thinking of the matchups. You know,
the matchups sound good, but that would never happen. You're gonna have three promoters on one card. Nah, it's like a Nah, that won't work. I'll just leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. But
While you're staying in the heavyweight division, now we do have Stevenson? Not Stevenson. I'm trying to think. Don't we have another substitution in the heavyweight division for a big fight that was coming up? Who was it? I wanted to say it was Parker. Isn't Parker due to fight someone also?
It's going to be a cupcake. He's fighting in his home country. I don't think it's going to be a big name because he's having a hometown fight. So, yeah, that's just going to be just to shake the rust off and to get back in the rankings. He's not having a big fight. But I think Harry Fury and Pulev is fighting for one of the mandatories for one of Joshua belts. So that's why Eddie Hearn was throwing that out there, because they're supposed to be fighting in October. So that's pretty much the wrap on the heavyweight division.
Yeah. Now, another young man that we've seen, young prospect, it seems that Shakur Stevens is now found out that he'll have a new opponent for his upcoming fight. And I believe that'll be a co-feature on ESPN on October 13th, I believe it is, next week. So,
JK, we can't forget to shout out our man, Iceman John Scully, for putting in that work over the weekend, and him and his fighter overcoming some adversity, getting off the canvas, and coming out with a knockout victory.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, I did want to talk a little bit about that. What do you think? We talked about the heavyweight division. We saw the two both opponents get knocked down and get up off the canvas in the Vargas fight. We saw now in this fight, we saw champions lose their titles on the scales. What do you think when you see these guys, that are now, getting up off the canvas, overcoming the adversity, and really putting their heart on the line? Your thoughts, man.
Well, specifically speaking about Beterbiev, I think they're going to match make him carefully. Because if you notice, they had him on the fast track at first. I think they're going to pull him back a little bit. I said to Scully in the past about his defense that he tends to get hit, and as we saw, he went down yesterday, but he got up like a warrior and did what champions do and came back and won the fight. But when we talk in that division and you got guys like Adonis Stevens and Bivol and Badu Jack, some real hard hitters, that's experienced, that's been through wars, mentally, how would he stand with those guys, especially an explosive guy like Adonis Stevens? Because, once he sees you hurt, he kind of gets like wilder a little bit. He goes off, so he'll hit you with shots from all different angles. What's your thoughts on that, JK? You think this guy is the goods, or they should pull him back a little bit to get a little more experience under his belt?
I think they should pull him back a little bit, get a little more experience under his belt. And I think his fight last night was probably even more proof of that. Because, you know, he did get knocked down, even though he did get back up off the canvas. When you think of, you know, some of, you mentioned Adonis Stevens. I'm also thinking about Bobby Jack and some of the other guys in that particular division that if he had got knocked down under the same circumstances, that might have possibly finished him off. So I think he needs to go back, work on his defense, maybe even his footwork a little bit. He's proved that he has a good chin, but you can't just keep sticking it out there in the light heavyweight division. You know, the safety of the fighter is very important, and I know that Scully knows that, and, you know, fighters that he's trained in the past, Scully is not going to let them necessarily put themselves in that point of that particular point of danger. And I'm not saying, you know, that just he's as protective as a Buddy McGirt or anything like that, but I think in this particular case, they need to pull him back a little bit, you know, maybe get him some a few more fights before they try to step on the gas. As like you said, they seem to do out of the gate. Be interesting to talk to Scully about that, see what his opinion is. What do you think?
Yeah, can't wait to get him back on the show. But like to dive into Rumorville real quick, JK. And I'm hearing different things. I want to hear your opinion on it. And what have you heard in Rumorville on this subject? I've heard multiple things. I heard one, Manny Pacquiao could be facing Adrian Broner in December or January. And the winner of that fight will end up fighting Mayweather in the summer or fall for a big mega payday over in Japan. And I'm hearing Floyd that will have a warm-up fight in January in Japan. So I'm hearing mixed things. And I've seen on Broner's Instagram that he's in training camp. And he just said, I got something very big coming. Well, what's your thoughts? What you think going on, and what have you heard?
Well, I've heard the same thing. I've actually had a few discussions about it. Not just on my Facebook page, but on our other show, The Pugilist Corner. And, you know, at first, you know, I thought it was, you know, just one of those trivia things, you know, you always hear, you know, we heard about, you know, Floyd going into the octagon against Conor. You know, we heard, you know, the Manny Pacquiao, Floyd rematch thing before. But when this rumor kind of came out, it actually made some sense. And I'll tell you why. Let's go back far back to Muhammad Ali fighting in the Zaire. Now, the first thing I thought about is, well, where else is Floyd going to go where he could make $300 million like he did in the Conor McGregor fight? And then, you know, I'm like, well, no, you know, that fight can't be made in the United States. That fight's not going to be made in Europe. But I never thought about Japan. Never even crossed my mind. Then I thought about how much money the Japanese invest into their sports. You think about Kobe Bryant selling sneakers in China. But then you think about how many yen would Floyd pull in Japan, especially in a two-fight deal. Because, like you said, there's going to be a cupcake warm-up. Then you're going to have the Manny Pacquiao Broner fight. And the winner is going to fight Floyd. Not in Las Vegas, not over in the UK, not in Germany, but in Tokyo. For Floyd, if dollars make sense, this is definitely the way to go. Now, do I want to see it? Now we come to a different. Now we come to a whole different plane, a whole different theater. What is Pacquiao beats Broner? Do we really want to see Pacquiao, man? Floyd again at this stage in their career? I don't really think so. Not over here. I don't think the average boxing fan might say, yeah, you know, maybe out of sentiment, you know, out of sentimentality, maybe a few hardcore fans will watch it, but I don't think this is the type of fight that's going to really generate a lot of Western fans to it. Now, what happens if Broner wins? Broner against Floyd, the student against the pupil. Broner gets a major payday. Broner hasn't shown me anything to make me want to see him necessarily against Floyd either, except for the difference in age. Broner doesn't look like a top-notch knockout fighter, which is one of the things that the Chalos have been saying about them being on the undercard. To a guy that looks mediocre when he's in the ring. So I'm not really sure if I want to see either one of those, Pacquiao Floyd or Broner Floyd, especially, for $100 or whatever it's going to be. I'm sure it's going to be more than that. I'm intrigued mentally, but physically, I'm not excited about the fight.
I gotta confirm this information. Wow, I'm getting information right now that it looked like this is being wrapped up. That this is really true, and what a coincidence we're talking about the subject, and I'm getting information that it's looking like Manny's gonna sign the deal. But like I said, I gotta reach out to some other sources to make sure that this is correct.
But when you consider Manny's financial troubles, this is a good deal for Manny. It's a good deal for everybody that's involved. But it's, like I said, even though mentally it sounds very good, how many of us really have our heart in it? You know, is the man in Pacquiao going to be a pay-per-view? And then, you know, how much is that going to be? Are you going to, you know, spend, you know, $300 to watch two fights? I mean, it all depends upon the packaging to my point of view, in order for me to be interested, they're going to have to do something spectacular also on the undercard.
But let's just ask a casual fan this question. What does any of those fights do for boxing? What does it do for the welterweight division?
I agree. That's why I said mentally, yeah, but, you know, physically, you know, your heart's not in it because what happens next? You know, there's no titles involved because Floyd is his own promoter. There's no sanctioning body involved here if it's a Floyd fight. So casual or hardcore, like you said, what effect is it going to have on the welterweight division? Is Manny going to fight for another championship? I don't think so. Adrian Broner, depends on his contract, you know, but is Floyd going to re-retire? You know, and I mean, like you said, it has no lasting effect on the division. So, you know, how many people are going to be willing to pay for it except for either sentiment or, you know, perhaps the casual fan recognizing the name?
Now, JK, what's your thoughts on WBC mandating Keith Thurman for Sean Porter? And do you think Keith Thurman is going to take that fight immediately? If that's the case.
I don't think that Keith Thurman is going to take this fight right off the bat, mandatory or not. I think I would, if I were him, I would definitely take a fight before Sean Porter. When you look at Sean's body of work, unless you're going to, you know, unless you have a rematch clause in there, this is not a fight that I would take coming off a layover such as that he's had. And this is not, I'm not saying this out of disrespect to Keith Thurman. I'm saying this because I think in order for it to be the best fight possible, not only for from a fan's point of view, I think that this is a fight that would have fight of the year, maybe even knockout of the year. If we have a healthy Keith Thurman, a tuned up Keith Thurman against a vengeful Sean Porter. I would rather see the fight when they, after some type of tune-up for Keith. But that's just from what I consider a professional point of view. And I don't know. If I were Keith, maybe, you know, I'd find a way, you know, I'd use a Canelo map or something, maybe, to find another way. Maybe I have a softer mandatory somewhere for a different belt, you know, where I could schedule it, some type of matchmaking. But I wouldn't come right off of an injury and put myself in there with Sean Porter, even though I do want to see the fight. What are your thoughts?
Nah, they're not going to do that. He's going to get the opportunity to take a warm-up fight, but after that fight, they're mandating that he has to fight Sean Porter. But moving right along on to another fight that was mandated by the WBC, I want your thoughts on it also. We have Mr. J-Rock Williams versus Laura. What's your thoughts on that matchup?
You know what? I really like this matchup, but you know, when you look at Laura's body of work, it's not so much that Laura loses the fight mentally or physically. I think it's because Laura's so technically sound. Now, he did something in the last fight. He actually came out and fought. And this is a little out of the norm for him. And I'm not, maybe it's because the younger fighter pressed him and he had to. And J-Rock is going to do the same thing. But, Laura is still a very crafty veteran and still has those great defensive skills. But I no longer think that the judges are really, how am I going to say this? I don't think the judges appreciate his style. Now, like they did, say, perhaps earlier in his career. This is another, I would almost call this a crossroads fight for Laura. But if Laura loses, I'm not sure if Laura's not regulated to gatekeeper. So it should be to me, this is a crossroads fight for Laura and, you know, exactly what his future is going to be. Your thoughts?
I think it's a good matchup, but I think J-Rock will be outmatched. One thing with Laura, he will do what it takes to win. Whatever style you present to him, if you're an aggressive fighter and you bring the fight to him where he has no choice but to fight, he will do it. He has the dog in him. He only does that if he have to. We saw it in the Angulo fight. He was forced to fight. He got off the canvas and showed you his kahunas, what he's made of. So the type of fighter J-Rock is, he likes to fight in a straight line. He don't give you angles. Is tailor-made for Laura. Laura will have a field day with J-Rock. J-Rock has a lot of heart. He will still be competitive. He will still press and come forward. But I see in the later rounds, Laura will just have a clinic with him.
Do you think that we appreciate defense as much as we did, 5 years ago?
I mean, not as fans, they don't appreciate defense, but me personally, I appreciate defense. Speaking of defense, to the listeners and to you, JK, you can go to Andre Ward Facebook page. He has a hour-long interview. It was a great interview done. He spoke about his career, his life as a child. I mean, it is a great piece. You definitely need to check that out. I will post it up on, tag it to the Pugilist Corner page.
And what did you say the fans could find this on Andre's Facebook page?
Yep, it's on Andre Ward Facebook page, and he has the link for the YouTube, and he talks about everything from his post-career, being a host on Contender, his upbringing as a child, who was the hardest punchers out of his career. He give you insight on everything.
Speaking of Andre, we've had a few of the gentlemen from the Contender try to get Shane Mosley's son on. And all of them speak very highly of how Andre opened up to him and actually talked. And, you know, a lot of them thought that he would be quiet and closed off. But they spoke of how he took them all under his wing, he actually embraced his role on the Contender. And a lot of the young men were actually very glad to work under him during the series. Kind of staying with that. It seems to me that since Andre has retired, he's become much more open. He seems a lot more relaxed, and he doesn't really seem to me. Maybe I took this a little literal, or maybe my eyes are seeing something different. But he seems to be very. He seems to be in. Embracing his retirement. He doesn't seem to, like you see a lot of ex-fighters, including Roy Jones, Antonio Tarver, even Shane Mosley, Zab Judah. They all seem to have that, that little chip on their shoulder, like maybe, their career wasn't satisfying enough for them. Andre seems to be very content. How do you view Andre's retirement? Has he become more personable, a little bit more open, a little bit more human, Andre Ward?
Well, for me, I've been a fan of Andre Ward before even the Super Six. I used to watch him on ESPN Friday Night Fight. He used to be on Friday Night Fight, and they showed him training on the beach one time, and he was in the water throwing punches with the Verge had the body vest on and the waves crashing into his back, and it was just, it was just a great thing, and it just showed that his heart and dedication from that young guy coming from the Olympics. So with that being said, I feel like he always never had a high expectation. Like, when I say that, like, people never expected him to never accomplish anything. No one expected him to win the gold medal. No one expected him to win the Super Six. No one expected him to beat Chad Dawson. No one expected him to beat Kovalev. Like, it was always nobody expected him to achieve things. And once he reached the mountaintop of beating Kovalev the second time, it was like it's no more for him to accomplish, where he's always been the undersized guy. That's something that he talked about in that interview that you have to go check out. The guy over 8. Just to maintain that weight. So he was always a smaller guy. He wasn't never a big guy. So
for him to fight those guys that he fought and the punches that he fought. Like, you know, I feel that he's real content with where he's at. And like he said out his mouth, once he retired, his phone rung more than ever, you know, for not fights, but for TV roles, movie roles, mentoring, you know, just so many other things outside of boxing, because now people got to really appreciate his career. You know, he wasn't the flashy guy, flamboyant. He always stuck to his ground as being SOG, Son of God.
I really want to, you know, check out the link and the story, but can you kind of preview us a little bit? Does he talk about his relationship with Virgil at all?
Oh, yeah. He breaks down the particulars on how they met and different things. You know, he didn't want to give too much away because he has a documentary that's coming out that, you know, is going to be a great documentary. He says he's going to really open up his life to everyone with this documentary. So, you know, he talked about his upbringing, you know, how he was raised, his drive, and how he got into the sport of boxing and why he always stuck with it. And he talked about him being human. It was times as a teenager where he was in the streets and running and doing things. And something happened, and he called Virgil up and told Virgil, like, look, I want to come back. You know, I want to, you know, I'm ready to do this. And, you know, Virgil took him in and it started. And, you know, he talked about the contender, something that he looked up to coming up in the sport. You know, it is a great thing is a great honor to be asked to be a part of the show, to be a legacy of something in the future that people can look back and say, hey, you know, he was a host, he mentored those fighters, and those fighters can pass it on to their children and other fight fans. So, I mean, it's a real deep piece. He talk about his religion. He talk about, you know, everything, marriage, you know, about how great it was by him that saved him by coming into the sport, being married and already having a child, because he wasn't running out to the clubs and partying after the fight. He was going straight home and training. You know, he just stayed grounded. And I think that's something that these younger fighters should definitely look at. You know, get home taken care of first, and everything else will fall into place.
Yeah, that's something that we've been talking about for many years. How those things can stabilize one's not only their mind, but their foundation. Hey, man, as usual, all good things come to an end, and it's been another 90 minutes on Sunday talking about the sport that we all love and respect. So, Jabron, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media? And tell anyone about any final thoughts that you might have this Sunday evening.
Well, as always, thank you for listening. Thank you, JK, and shout-outs to John Scully. He couldn't make it today. He's traveling back from his fight. And shout-outs to the champ, Layman Brewster. As always, you know, he's busy with the family and making moves. So, hey, keep supporting boxing, and until the next time, I'm Jabron Clemens. You find me on Facebook. That's J-A-B-R-A-N, Clemens, C-L-E-M-O-N. Let them know where they can find you at, JK.
You can find me on Facebook under the Pugilist Corner. And once again, I want to point out our fundraiser. We've been joined by K9 Bundage as well as the champ Layman Brewster in our trying to organize funds to purchase water and possibly educational equipment for those that have been affected by Hurricane Florence. So you can check out our Facebook page, check out our fundraiser, and you can catch us next Sunday right here on the Weekend Wrap, as well as on Tuesday on the Pugilist Corner. So have a great night, everyone. If you have the Champions Brew available in your area, make sure you check that out. The Champions Brew, made exclusively for Layman Brewster, James Tony, Ray Mercer, and Chris Bird. So check out their website, thechampionsbrew.com, as well as our website, thepugilistcorner.com. So have a great weekend, everyone. We look forward to talking to you next Sunday.